And we're very happy and honored to have Professor Barbara Sherwood Lawler joining us today on the Roadhouse. Professor Sherwood Lawler is a professor in Earth Sciences at the University of Toronto. She was recently named by Canadian Geographic magazine as a change maker, making a significant difference in Canada and the world in her work in discovering and analyzing ancient water in the Earth's crust. She's truly a heavyweight in her field and has been a recipient of many academic awards and was selected in 2000 by Time Magazine Canada for her feature in Leaders for the 21st Century. Professor Sherwood Lawler, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Thank you so much. It's a great pleasure.
It's a pleasure on our side, that's for sure. You have been traveling the world, I believe, most recently in South Africa, looking at ancient rocks and ancient waters. What brought you to Timmins, the Timmins mine in Ontario, and what did you find there?
Well, it's actually been a labor of love over the last 20 years or so. We actually started most of this research at sites in Canada. I'm a Canadian, and when I was doing graduate research here back about 20 years ago is when we first started working with some of the mines and in some of the mines in the ancient hard rock parts of the world, crystalline rock mines of the world, and stumbled upon the presence of these very salty waters deep in the crust, 2 and 3 kilometers down. From there, we worked with microbiologists in South Africa, taking a look at microbes that might be living in that water. And then just most recently, we're back again in our home territory, in this particular case in Timmins, Ontario, in the northern part of our province. And it was there that we first began to really understand just how old some of these systems are.
Now, what I was reading was ages that had a range of from a little over 1 billion years ago to 2.5 billion years ago, the age of the waters that you discovered there. It's hard for me to have a grasp of just how long ago that was. How old, in general, what is the feeling about how old the Earth is?
Well, the Earth is, of course, over 4 billion years in age. And, you know, it was certainly a surprise for us, too, to understand just how old these waters are. Geologists have known for a long time that there is a way to get tiny samples of either fluid or the atmosphere from the very early Earth. These are things called fluid inclusions, and they're little microscopic blebs of either fluid or gas trapped in the rocks as they formed. So that's been accepted for a long time. If you take a look at these tiny little fluid inclusions, you might actually find a tiny remnant of fluids or waters or air from the very earliest times on the Earth's planet. But what was different about this study is this is the very first time that anyone's identified flowing water, significant volumes of flowing water. I mean, you could fill up a cup and drink this stuff if you wanted to. That is of a similar kind of age, and really that was what was so exciting about this discovery.
Now, would that have been trapped by volcanic action, or is it, once again, how would those rocks have formed, if not?
Well, this particular deposit is from 2.7 billion years ago, and at that time, essentially, that part of what is now a landmass in Canada was the ocean floor, the Archean ocean floor. And so, in fact, if I can give you a visual almost on this, because if you've seen pictures of the black smokers and hydrothermal vents on the ocean floor today, this was a similar kind of phenomenon 2.7 billion years ago, a massive black smoker or hydrothermal deposit that was pouring out on the ocean floor and forming these deposits along the floor of the ancient ocean. Now, since that time, what was the horizontal ocean floor has been tipped, so it's a vertical formation now. And so the mine, which began in the 1950s as an open-pit mine, is now going deeper and deeper and deeper as it follows down into the earth what was the ancient ocean floor.
Now, I understand that one of the ways that you briefly decide about the water that you discover is the amount of salinity that you can taste in the water as far as its age is concerned.
Yeah, well, that got a lot of notoriety, I'm afraid, more so than I had really intended. I mean, really, what it comes down to is any field geologist is uses all of their various senses when you're out in the field, whether that's above ground or deep underground, trying to figure out which of the specimens you want to work on. You're picking things up, you're sniffing them, you're feeling them, you're scratching them. And yes, now and again, you're actually just sort of, you know, you don't drink the stuff, but you might just dip a finger into the end and touch it to your tongue to find out which is salty. And again, the reason is that these waters have become very salty, sometimes up to 10 times the salinity of seawater. And that's a function of the amount of time they've sat in the subsurface in contact with the rock. All kinds of reactions are going on, chemical water rock reactions between the rock and the water, and this is what leaches different minerals and salts out of the rock and into the water. So we already had a sort of back-of-the-envelope knowledge that the saltier the water, the older it is. So if we're down there and we're very quickly trying to identify which of a variety of different holes that's producing water is the one that we might be most interested in, then sure, a quick dip of your finger in to see which one is saltiest is a quick way to identify where you want to put your effort in collecting the samples.
So is the lack of salinity in freshwater, that's due to the age of the freshwater then?
Well, no, not really. I mean, freshwater in the surface of the planet, of course, is undergoing the well-known hydrogeological cycle. But the fact is these kinds of waters are cut off from that surface hydrosphere. These are relatively small amounts of groundwater compared to the kinds of groundwater one might use as a drinking water, for instance. They're the waters that are trapped in fractures in this crystalline rock. I mean, layman's term for this kind of rock would be granite. That's not an accurate geological use, but if I use that, then your listeners will know what it is I'm talking about. It visualizes sort of a granite rock with a few fractures running through it, the way you might get cracks in the foundation of a house. Those cracks contain water. And the longer that water sits in the subsurface in contact with those rocks, the more the salinity that it's going to pick up. So we can use salinity as a proxy for residence time, for how long the water's been there.
Is that kind of how you determine the age that you're giving this water?
Actually, no. I mean, all we can do with the salinity is know that it means that these waters have been in the subsurface for a very long time. It's a qualitative thing. In order to actually get a quantitative measure of that residence time, that's where we went to the kinds of techniques that are described in that paper that got published 6 months ago, and that is using the noble gases, helium, neon, krypton, argon, and xenon. These noble gases are the kinds of things that people are familiar with them in helium balloons, for instance, but they're used scientifically for a very specific purpose. They're tracers in the subsurface. They can tell us if there's a contribution to the water that we're looking at from a volcanic or magmatic deposit. They can tell us whether there's a contribution from the surface, or they can tell us, and this is what we found in this case, that in fact the noble gases are almost exclusively those produced by water rock reactions. And because they're produced by those reactions, the amount of the those elements, in particular certain isotopes of those elements, build up in time. In other words, the longer that water sits there, the more of this material it picks up. And by measuring how much is there, we can back out a residence time estimate.
We're speaking with Professor Sherwood Lawler, and she is a professor in earth sciences at the University of Toronto. She was recently named by the Canadian Geographic magazine as a change maker, making a significant difference in Canada and the world for her work in discovering and analyzing ancient waters in the Earth's crust. And she has discovered some very old ancient waters near Timmins, Ontario. What is the significance of finding this amount of water? Is this free-flowing water is something new and you hadn't found it anywhere else that you've been looking?
The phenomenon of this kind of free-flowing water, we actually now know, after years of working on it, that this occurs in the deep Earth crust in this kind of crystalline rock throughout the planet. But this is the first time that we've been able to put this kind of residence time in it and to understand just how old it is. And so it's significant from the point of view of pushing back our understanding of just how old free-flowing water can be. The other two major points of significance has to do with understanding life on Earth and, frankly, with understanding the potential for life on other planets like Mars.
Is it a fair statement to say that finding these ancient waters really gives you a view of what life on Earth at that very same time would have been like?
Well, at the moment, it's too early to say. We're analyzing these waters to see if anything lives in them. But what it does tell us is that these are another part of our planet that may harbor life. If you're as old as I am, you'll remember that back before the late 1970s and early 80s, we had this idea that life on our planet was just a thin veneer on the surface, that life on Earth was basically almost entirely dependent on energy from the sun, on photosynthesis. But one of the first great revolutions that I lived through as a young geoscientist was the discovery of the deep-sea hydrothermal vents, and in fact the discovery that there were microorganisms and then entire ecosystems around those deep-sea vents, living deep in the ocean, cut off from the sun's energy, but driven instead by chemosynthesis, life coming from the energy drawn from chemical reactions. But at that time, it was thought that that was largely something that was just related to these kinds of hydrothermal vents on the ocean floor. What our studies are now showing is that we have waters with similar chemistries throughout the crystalline rocks of our planet. And so, in fact, there's the potential for life to be subsisting in the deep subsurface of this planet on a much larger scale, a much larger volume of the Earth's crust may, in fact, be what we call habitable, that is, able to sustain life. What we're trying to find out now is, in fact, just how many of these localities do have life forms.
What kind of life forms would you be finding, and how do you go about finding them?
Well, the best thing to describe there is indeed the work you referred to earlier then, which is our work in South Africa, which is done with teams of microbiologists from T.C. Onstad at Princeton and Esther Van Herten at the University of Free State in South Africa. And working with them, what we have found indeed is by taking samples of the water, taking samples of the cells and biomass that's in the water, and doing both cultures but also genomic analysis, what's been discovered there is that indeed these are largely chemosynthetic communities, communities that are drawing their energy from water rock reactions, and specifically from hydrogen that gets produced in those systems. And this is very, in many ways, very similar to what's seen at the hydrothermal vents. So far, what we're seeing is similarities to the kinds of organisms that are indeed found at the deep hydrothermal vents.
You mentioned earlier that you may find some significance as far as looking for life on other planets as well. Maybe you could expand on that a little.
Well, what a lot of people don't realize is that Mars, in many ways, is sort of a twin planet to ours, or at least it was at one time. And that is, there are major components, major parts of the Martian crust that are very similar in both age and mineralogy to the Canadian Shield, or the same kind of rocks that we see in South Africa or Australia, these billion-year-old rocks on our planet. And so if what we've been able to show is that deep within these billion-year-old rocks on Earth, there's still water, and water that contains, through water rock reaction, the kinds of energy that can support life, then there's every reason to think that the same phenomenon is possible within rocks of a similar age and mineralogy on Mars. Now, in both cases, of course, what I'm referring to is this idea of habitability, that this would imply that if we find these waters with energy here on this planet, that it's likely that we'll find them on Mars. The question of whether or not any life is, in fact, taking advantage of that energy, whether anything actually lives there, is a second question and one that we're still working on.
At the waters that you've found now in the Timmins mine, will they change with exposure to more complex environment?
Well, certainly. I mean, what we find is we've measured these over time, and we find that the continued flow, and so in a number of these, for instance, we've been sampling them for periods of years, and so this material is continuing to flow out. But for sure, as it comes out and mixes with mine air, or if we bring it up to the surface and it mixes with an oxygenated atmosphere, absolutely, it changes. So if we want to, for instance, really analyze and understand what the water was like before it came into contact with air, we just have to take some very careful sampling procedures to ensure that we have no contamination of the sample, and we're looking actually at the material just as it came out of the rock.
What is the next step, then, as far as where you go from here? Is it looking for the forms of life that may be there, or are you looking for more examples of ancient waters?
We're actually doing both. You know, having identified what is literally a new component of the hydrosphere, we really want to understand as we go from place to place throughout these kinds of geologic settings in Canada or South Africa or Australia, just how frequently would we find this kind of ancient water? At what depths do we find this kind of ancient water? In other words, to try and map out the distribution of ancient water and its various ages. Can we identify some that are billions of years old, maybe hundreds of millions of years old, maybe tens of millions of years old elsewhere? And can we then, as a second step, then see what lives in each of those different pockets of water? Some referring to this as the Galapagos of the deep. Take a look at these different pockets and see whether they all support life, and if they do, how does life differ from one to another? Or whether indeed we find that some support life and some do not.
Well, it certainly is exciting research, and something that we can look back and say, apply it to our understanding of how life began on planet Earth. Is there applications also for today's world that may come from this?
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of people very interested to take a look at the organisms living in these kinds of settings. I've mentioned that many of the ones we found in South Africa are similar to what's found at the hydrothermal vents, but there are also novel organisms found within these communities as well, ones that have not been seen before. And so, as usual, there's always interest if you can find new kinds of organisms in terms of the possible practical applications of that kind of thing.
We've been speaking with Professor Barbara Sherwood Lawler. She's a professor in earth sciences at the University of Toronto and was recently named by Canadian Geographic as a change maker, making a significant difference, as we've learned in this interview. Very exciting research. Dr. Sherwood Lawler, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time this afternoon. It's been just great talking to you.
It's a really great pleasure. Thank you so much.